House Bill 3571, first, will you explain what that is for us, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3571 came to us aid in growth. It narrows the definition of community centers for the purpose of exclusive farm use zoning.
And we have Representative Wayne Schiller. This is your bill.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Wayne Schiller, State Representative, District 34. Just very briefly, you see in front of you a letter from me to the Benton County Board of Commissioners, and it sort of tells the genesis of this bill. Project VoteSmart, as you may know, has been headquartered in Corvallis. And at one point in the past year or so, we decided they wanted to build what would have been a research facility and basically a dormitory for their volunteer researchers that come from around the world. And they wanted to build this under the designation of a community center under ORS 215.283, which authorizes community centers in EFU land. Only the trouble was they weren't going to let the community use the center. It was going to be just Project VoteSmart for their staff and for their research facility. And surprisingly, the Benton County Planning Commission actually allowed the application. I refer to the third full paragraph in my letter where it says what the Planning Commission decided. They felt that the proposed library and research facility constituted a community center operated by Project VoteSmart as a community organization in the context of a larger national or global community of interest, and actually allowed the community center designation or the application on that basis. Fortunately, when the neighbors got energized about this, the Benton County Commission has overturned the Planning Commission, but it certainly did raise a concern about the scope of how that community center might be construed in statute. So you have before you House Bill 3571, which is intended to clarify that community center for these purposes is a community center for the local rural community which it serves. This is so Dallas, for instance, where I live, can't go out and build a facility out in EFU land out of town and call it the Dallas Community Center. If it's going to be a community center, I think the intent originally was that it would serve the residents of the local community which reside around the community center, and that's the intent of this bill. I offer to you it received, I guess, the vote, but there was no opposition to speak of at all in the House.
Hey, let me ask you a quick one, and I think Mr. Senator Holcomb has a question also, but perhaps this will be answered. We're talking about existing community centers, not new ones, but existing?
We're talking about new ones.
New ones.
Yes, new applications. This would not affect existing community centers.
Representative Sherry, I guess I just want to be real clear for the record that what the intent of language change, the net effect of the language change that you propose would keep VoteSmart from locating up there.
Senator Corcoran, VoteSmart has already lost the Benton County Commissioners, and in fact, as a result of that proceeding, I think they're uprooting and moving their operations in Minnesota or something like that.
That's a good thing. I was hoping Ren was in Minnesota or something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I now will support the bill, yes.
Any questions?
That's a terrible organization.
Thank you very much. So the only language that changed I see is on page 4, where it says, an upgraded permit by and for residents of the local community.
To narrow right. What the purpose will be.
Okay. Thank you very much. I've got two other folks kind of testify on this bill. However, let me ask... Mr. Tucker and Mr. Avery, you both have indicated you're for this thing. I appreciate that very much. And we're going to go into work session on...
sorry.
Anything further?
No, thank you.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3571. And we're going to open the work session on House Bill 3571. Senator Tucker.
Mr. Chair. I move the bill of the day for Representative Shetterly and our committee, his other take-home bill, House Bill 3571, to the floor with a unfortunate do-pass recommendation.
Senator Corcoran, in his usual way, moves House Bill 3571 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any objections or discussion? Heard none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Need a vote explanation for that.
Aye.
Chair, I, House Bill 35, the unit passes for the defense recommendation. Assuming the clerk can be in a trade up for me.
I would be honored. I didn't get much grief today from that other bill that was there to carry.
Close the work session on 3571 and open the public hearing, House work session on House Bill 3599. And Ray, what is that, please?
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3599 came to us in growth. It modifies removal or tilt standards that apply to converted wetlands, and it modifies the definition of converted wetlands.
What's Lane Shetterly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, again, Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 34. And I want to correct Senator Corcoran in his statement that he was voting for the bill of the day. There are two bills of the day for me. This is another take-home bill.
Maybe you understand what I was trying to say.
I will give you the factual background, and Pete Tess, I know, is here from Farm Bureau, can give you more of the technical spin, and I will run upstairs for my judiciary committee, so I appreciate your indulgence. You're being distributed packets of documents with a letter on top from Division of State Lands dated December 5, 1997, to Clarence Vanell and Vanell Farms. I'd like you to first start very briefly at the back of the packet. The last two pages, one is the cover of a book, Benton County, Oregon, Geology, Topography, Soil, and Productions. If you look at the date, that's 1885. And then if you open or turn the page, you see the farm residence 8 miles south of Corvallis. That farm is actually what is now the Vanell Farm, the folks to whom the letter is addressed on the front of the page. That is the ground the Vanells are farming. As you can see, it's been in production since at least 1885. Obviously, it was in production even well before this lithograph was printed. That's significant because in December, in 1997, they were replacing some existing tiling on one of their fields, in order to drain the ground, to be able to get in and work the ground in, for their spring crops, and Pete Tess can tell you exactly what that's all about. They were surprised to receive this letter of December 5 out of the blue with no prior contact from DSL. It's a cease and desist order telling them to stop removing fill and draining a wetland. Again, what they were doing was they were replacing tiling to drain water out of a field that had been in production since at least 1885. The next letter is a letter from Clarence Vanell to Paul Cleary, Director of the Division of State Lands, again explaining to Mr. Cleary the history of the use of the property and pleading with Mr. Cleary that it should be treated as a farmed wetland and exempt from the regulations that DSL was enforcing. To DSL's credit, we were able to work this out with them. They did lift the cease and desist order, but still under the regulations that DSL is faced with, the Vanells would be faced, required to get at least a what's called a delineation, a matter of paying some $2,000 to $3,000 to get a delineation, to have somebody go out, a hydrologist or whatever these folks are that do that, to identify where the wetlands are in these fields, and then they'd be allowed to drain some of it and engage in fill removal, but not in other parts. The concern, of course, that becomes a requirement for every valley farmer before they can start replacing tiling. We are going to be shutting down the agricultural community industry in the valley. This bill, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is a bill that we worked with DSL and Farm Bureau and Oregon Unions for Food and Shelter. And I think those are basically the groups on behalf of the Vanells and everybody else who may ultimately be affected by the action that I think DSL was compelled to take under existing statute and regulations. And it expands the subsurface drainage activities that are permitted in circumstances similar to the Vanells. It will alleviate their situation, but most importantly, will prevent that from becoming a problem for farmers up and down the valley.
Questions of what is short?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say that I'll probably be supporting this bill, but I remember in my psychology classes when I was in college, we had this negative intermittent reinforcement and positive intermittent reinforcement as a learning mechanism.
if we keep approving these bills, this guy's going to keep coming back and back and back and back and back.
Is that your issue? You're going to vote no?
I'm supporting the bill. I'm just warning you.
What do you
think? We're going to see more of him than we want to see him if you keep voting these darn things through.
Okay.
Okay.
From the way, are you okay with this? President Shirley, thank you very much. We'll let you be on about your way. And that's your success. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands. And before you have testimony from Paul Cleary, which I will deliver on his behalf, we've worked with Representative Shirley and Farm Bureau and the Organization of Oregonians for Food and Shelter at trying to clarify in law what is a rather complex and confusing situation relative to the work done in agricultural wetlands by agricultural producers. And as indicated in our testimony, you can see that what we have here basically is what you might call a collision of public policy in dealing with trying to create better air quality at the same time and protect water quality. We need to make a balancing decision here. What this bill would do is make it clear, appropriate and clear that agricultural producers could continue to operate under an exemption from the removal fill law or what we determined to be in the bill, subsurface drainage by deep ripping, tiling, and molding on converted wetlands. So these would be agriculturally farmed wetlands that are in some places already subject to drainage by subsurface tiling. What we see now is that there's a lot of this tiling being replaced because it's old and non-functional. At the same time, the systems of doing this work have improved so that some more drainage can be done and improving the agricultural productivity of this ground. This is an area where we have found some difficulty in applying, say, a regulatory approach to protecting and restoring wetlands, as has been state policy. We think that probably in this kind of venue, the better approach might be a non-regulatory approach dealing with the restoration of wetlands or the protection and conservation of wetlands through some voluntary approaches with agricultural producers or other people in the Willamette Valley or other types of areas that have lands of this nature. But we support the bill. We've worked hard with the proponents, and we think it's worth your passage.
Okay. Mr. Kess, any comments? If not, we'll...
I'm beginning to learn the less you say, the better off you are, but I will just quickly give you a quick reason why all of a sudden this has become an issue so everybody would understand this. With a decision to reduce field burning, most of the grass seed farmers were in a position where they had a lot of tiling from the time they were doing different crops. But when they got into grass seed, a lot of the necessity for the increased drainage was disappeared because grass seed did not require the amount of drainage in early use that other crops did. When they discontinued field burning, one of the efforts and one of the management techniques you have to do to help reduce the disease and other problems that burning took care of was to rotate crops, which put them in a position where they had to go back to some of the crops that required the better drainage systems, so now they have to replace those systems so they can manage their grass seed without fire. In a sense, it's a trade-off, you know, and so this land has already been drained, it's just the tiling was not redone because of the new cropping. So that's kind of the reasoning, it's short and sweet, but the other thing I want to make clear is there's nothing that's still intended to drain any land that hasn't been drained or is wetlands. It's not intended to do, it's just to make sure the people that have already drained and are farming are able to continue, and then put that all. And this Pete Tess, Associate Director of Thumbnail College Farm Bureau for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Thunberg, go ahead.
My name is Glenn Thunberg for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Just on the very last section of the bill, I think it's a very important step in the right direction to realize that Natural Resources Conservation Service, which is a department, an agency of U.S. Department of Agriculture, they delineate wetlands, and oftentimes the state delineates wetlands. And what it looks like here is that we're going to be able to put those two things together, and it will be, and the farmer then will know if he has delineated wetlands by NRCS. That it definitely is a wetland, and should have been left in the dark. And so I see this as a good bill for that they can feel like they know more about what they're dealing with.
Gentlemen, thank you. Questions or comments? If not, thank you very much. Anyone else to sign up to testify on House Bill 3599? We're going to close the public hearing on 3599 and open work session on House Bill 3599.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran?
No, 3599 is
closed. Senator Corcoran moves House Bill 3599 to forward. You pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Can the clerk call the rule, please?
Aye.
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 Chair, I have to go 3599 passes the order pass recommendation. Senator Jewell will carry. Open the close of public hearing on 3599, and Representative Cruz is here on
3356 and 3357.
Open the public hearing, possible session on House Bill 3356. And Ray, why don't you explain just what the rules for this?
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3356A in gross allows Water Resource Department to waive certain requirements or fees and to provide additional assistance to applicants for changes in permits or water use subject transfer for projects implemented with the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board grant for transfer of in-stream water rights and for approved changes resulting in benefits to fish and wildlife habitat.
Representative Cruz, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jeff Cruz, District 45. House Bill 3356 was interim work group. We came to consensus with Water Resources on this. The whole theory behind it is that if somebody's going to do some work in the Pan area that's going to benefit the fish, that maybe the state shouldn't charge them so much for the permits, and maybe they ought to make it a little easier for them to get the system to get the work done. It's really a simple bill. It has the support of Water Resources, and it's just an attempt to try to do something fish friendly that'll help the folks out on the ground trying to do the work.
President Cruz, do you have a little bit of time, or are you in a hurry to get back to committee?
Well, I'm chairing a committee, and...
Hey, let me recess.
Hey, Representative, maybe we can help you out.
Let me recess this hearing on House Bill 3356, and we'll... can I open up my book at the same time?
Yeah.
I'm going to open up 3357 also, and President Cruz, you should really explain it.
Thank you. Once again, Representative Jeff Cruz, this is 45. By the way, I carried 3599 on the floor in the House, and in spite of the fact that there was Representative Shetler to do, we were able to pass it. 3357 basically talks about the fees that are charged for water that's already appropriated. It made no sense that for somebody to go in and to make application for water that's already appropriated for a use and to have to pay such an exorbitant fee for that water, since how it's already dedicated to a use. And this basically just reduces the fee. It has the support of Water Resources Department, and that is basically it. I try to do simple bills, Mr. Chair.
Questions or anything, please?
Thank you.
Pete Flash will
speak a little forward to both of these.
Well, I see that you've got Tom has signed up and Mr. Myers, and we'll bring both forward on both bills, I think.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Pete, you want to speak to both of these issues, and then Tommy will come forward too, and Mr. Myers, you also, I think you're on one of these bills. Mr. Tess, go ahead.
For the record, Pete Tess, Associate Director of Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Which one would you prefer?
3356.
3356. 3356, as Representative Cruz mentioned, does reduce the actual fee for application. For 3356 deals with changes or the allowing the director to waive fees for activities that would normally concede fees that their activities are being done for fish-friendly purposes. The issue here was created first in Jackson County, where actually with a Farm Bureau member working with a watershed council to eliminate two push-up dams, chose to move a diversion point. When he got the diversion point moved, he went just a little too far, and this relates to the certified water right examination. And had to get an examination, $3,000 extra on this project that should not have had to happen, but there was no way for the director to waive it. So he went there and said, if we've got those kind of conflicts, let's try and get a bill that says the director has the ability under conditions that are either with GWEB or whatever that's going to be in the future, and the fish and game, if there are fish-only activities that fees and certain conditions could be waived if they're not necessary to make it more reasonable for a person to do the job. That's generally what the bill does. We supported it. It has had problems like this all over the state, not only in Jackson, but other counties. And that's the base bare bones on 3356.
Okay, thank you. Matt Myers, go next, and then Mr. Byer can clean up for both of you guys, if you don't mind. Go ahead. Doug, ignore this guy. He can go away.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Doug Myers, representing Water Watch. We were on the other committee that work group that worked on this. We do support it. We think it's a good idea. As in many instances, we support the work of the Farm Bureau, and we are in favor of this bill.
I appreciate that. Mr. Butler, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Byler with the Water Resources Department. Just reiterate a few things you've heard. Indeed, this is a bill that we worked on conceptually with stakeholders prior to the session. We do support the bill. It does primarily two things, and the two things are designed to provide incentives for water users to do when they need to make changes or transfers to their rights to do so in a fish-friendly fashion. One change involves the discretion and authority for the director to waive all or part of a transfer application fee if the transfer has a fish-friendly impact. There are three ways to determine that. One is that the transfer will be part of an authorized GWEB project under the Oregon Plan. Two, the transfer would be authorized under the in-stream water rights statute, which allows for gift, leasing, or transfer to an in-stream right. Three, this would be possible when the water user obtains approval from the Department of Fish and Wildlife that the net impact of that transfer would have a benefit to the fishery. Second item involves being able to waive the requirement for a CWRE, Certified Water Rights Examiner. The Certified Water Rights Examiner provides a survey which gives the department the final record on a water right, and as a permit is proven up and becomes a certificate, it allows us to know where the water is being used, how much is being used. Basically, it determines the final record of the right. It's important information to have. This would allow us to either waive that if we have sufficient information, or for our staff to do that work themselves and to cover that, rather than having the water user have to hire out a certified water rights examiner. Those fees can range greatly for that service depending on the complexity of the project.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Questions? Well, thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3356 and open the work session on House Bill 3356. Senator Corcoran?
3356
before the due pass. Senator Corcoran, House Bill 3356 before due pass recommendations, discussions, objections?
Thank you very much,
Seth. Okay, clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair, aye. House Bill 3356 passed before due pass recommendation, I will carry. Close the work session on that bill. We are opening again the public hearing and work session on 3357. And Pete, if you want to go ahead, we already had heard from the representative on it.
Okay, just to reiterate, Senator, Representative Cruz, he mentioned the fact that this lowers the fee for the application for stored water, which has already gone through the process of being appropriated and put to that use, which does not require the amount of time by Water Resources to determine whether that permit should be allowed. The other thing it does that he didn't mention is really something that's pretty important to a lot of landowners. They either get stored water or you get fine supplemental water rights to a primary right. When the person applies for a supplemental right to back up his primary right, normally they do have to do the CSRE survey, which was mentioned before. And that includes for appropriated water. This bill also says when supplemental water rights are to cover the same primary water right, you don't have to go through that process. it's probably occurred with one of our members that was that had contracted for stored water to use as a supplement to primary water right. And besides the fee for that, it was close to $3,000, $4,000 to get the water right and get the math done on the same land he'd been using water on to begin with. And there was kind of a real problem, and Water Resources agreed and came up with this. So we support this. We worked with them hard to get it done, and Representative Cruz, and for that, I'll turn it over to Tom.
Mr. Beiler, go ahead and answer.
Senator Toronto, members of the committee, Tom Beiler, I'm with the Water Resources Department. This is another bill that we worked on with the Farm Bureau prior to the session. We are supportive of the concept. I'll just add a couple points. The fee reduction is involved fees for use of stored water, and the reason that we feel that this is an acceptable change is that a lot of the review that we do for applications to use water out of live flow, out of streams, involves some significant public interest review. Stored water, our stored water right already has gone through that process. A person needs a separate water right in order to use that stored water. It's that separate water right to use the stored water that we're talking about. It really is able to leapfrog that public interest review that can be pretty time-consuming and take a lot of staff resources. So in that regard, we are okay with reducing our base fee for these water rights applications from $250 to $100. We think that's inappropriate.
Well, you've already got a fee to extract water out of a tributary, and that's just pumping into a pond someplace. Then you have a fee in the pond to pump this one to yourself. So I understand. I'm glad you see you're agreeing with this bill. Any further discussion?
If I may just add just to clarify on the second point of this, we would allow a waiver of the final proof survey and CWRE requirements in instances where the supplemental rights, and supplemental rights are used to either make up for deficiencies in a primary right or when the primary right is not available at all. Only in cases where they share the same distribution system and have the same place of use. So it's going to, again, the key for these and the surveys that are involved in proving up these rights, the information is very important. We think that we've crafted this in a way to assure that we have the sufficient information to allow for this waiver.
Okay. Questions? So, thank you very much. I'm going to see if Senator Shannon's on the hallway for I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3357 and open the work session on House Bill 3357. Senator Corcoran?
3357 before we pass.
Senator Corcoran moves House Bill 3357 before we pass recommendations. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Have you done the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator
Corcoran? Aye.
Aye. Chair, aye. House Bill 3357 is passed the floor. Senator Shannon will chair.
In the arm off over here. Yeah, I will.
Close the legislation on House Bill 3357 and 3362.
We need to go up and
test that. Right. Open the work session on House Bill 3620. And of course, this bill was sent to us erroneously from the Joint Salmon Restoration Committee, whatever it's called, and we got to send it back to them. Okay, so there's a process that you have to use, and there's a script for my vice chair here.
And you can move that to regular court?
Yeah.
Without recommendations to. Mr. Chair, move to adjourn. Oh, that's the wrong page. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I withdraw my motion. Lay on the pit. Mr. Chair, I move to refer House Bill 3620 to the Joint Stream Restoration and Species Recovery Committee.
Senator Corcoran moves House Bill 3620 to the
Joint Stream
Restoration and Seafood Recovery Committee.
Without
recommendation.
Without recommendation or reservation.
Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 3620. And let's open up on 989.
Any other weird stuff to come?
Hey, you hang on. You wait to see. We're going to open the work session on Senate Bill 989. And plus we're in work session on this particular issue, so I would ask you to look at the bill. And we do have, I think you've been given dash one amendments.
To which one?
To 989.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
AC, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Mr. Stonebrick, you're one of these, or you're a minute, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, it's Glenn Stonebrick for the Oregon Cattlemen Association. They're actually legislative council's amendments because they saw that there was a constitutional amendment, a constitutional problem. I think the committee administrator will explain that, or I will.
Oh, no, Ray, why don't you go ahead and explain that? And he's right, I apologize.
Hey, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this came up, the legislative council pointed out there was a constitutional question as to the way the original bill was written, that the state of Oregon was delegating authority to county government to make a decision on behalf of the state to the federal government relative to this bill. What the statutory amendments do is they correct that in that the state of Oregon makes the definitive decision in any negotiation with the federal government, notwithstanding the requirements within the state for the state to go ahead and get consent of the county government. Does that make sense to everybody, Mr. Chair? The constitutional question that comes up, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is the state, Mr. Chamoff had informed us that the state cannot delegate authority to the county to make a decision on behalf of the state. What the amendment does is takes out that delegation authority and leaves the definitive decision to the state.
To the state.
Okay.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, if any of the members want, this bill came before we talked about the authority that is granted under the U.S. Constitution to the legislature to make decisions on federal purchases of lands. That authority was given away by the legislature in 1967 to the statutes that you have in front of you. And what this bill would do would remove those statutes, which restore the authority to the legislature. And one addition, as the committee administrator mentioned, was that the counties would, under Section 3 of this Dash A 3 amendment, counties would have to give consent under these two particular provisions. One, would they purchase federal forest land, or two, under the Migratory Bird Conservation Act. These are both federal acts, that the counties would have to grant authority as well.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I need to clarify because there's the constitutional question. The counties are not granted authority to make the decision with the federal government. That's where the constitutionality question is. Very important that the committee takes a look at Section 3. And the county consent to the state government is an internal state issue within the Constitution of the state of Oregon. It no longer has a question of federal constitutionality violation, and that the state, regardless of what's going on within the state maintains the authority to make the definitive decision with the federal government. That was the constitutionality question, and that's resolved by the AC amendment.
Okay. Is the committee okay with this?
No. Mr. Chair, I got some problems.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Stonebrick, the Migratory Bird Conservation Act, does that apply to bald eagles?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, I don't believe it does because you have to look at the definition. If a bald eagle is a migratory bird, I do not believe it is. This act, and I do have it in front of me here, but I didn't see that, talks about those birds that just migrate from from, you know, like yeast and that sort of thing.
And the Western Metal Art?
The Senator Clark and I'm not an authority on every bird.
Every bird. I have some problems. I think you've got enough people to understand.
We're in location folks, and we have the dash A3.
I move that.
Okay, Senator Shannon moves the dash A3 amendments to Senate Bill 989. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Shannon moves Senate Bill 989 as amended to the floor of the Duke House recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Understanding that Senator Corcoran has a problem, we'll call the roll, please.
No.
Aye.
Chair, aye. House Senate Bill 989, as amended, passed the floor, due pass recommendation. The chair will try to share this thing. Keep track here. Close the work session on 989, and we're going to open work session on Senate Bill 832. And Ray, maybe you can explain to us where we're at with this issue.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in your packet, you should have the dash 8 amendments, and I've gone ahead for the committee's convenience, only Hammond Gross those dash 8 amendments. You have the authors of the bill and the amendments in the crowd out there, Mr. Chair. And the amendments do make some significant adjustments to the A.N. Gross bill.
Mr. Donovan, why don't you come forward, please?
Sorry, I don't know. Are you talking about where I'm not on a person that's
not Mr. Donovan, do you want to walk us through these dash 8 amendments, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Donovan, representing Northwest Steelheaders. If I were to walk through it off of the hand and growth by the committee administrator, taking it point by point, the first significant change you'll find in Section 1 is the deletion of meandered language from Senate Bill 832. Meandered has to do with a federal designation of a waterway, and is frankly redundant and confusing, and was not significant to 832, so to simplify, that was removed. You'll find that also under Section 1, subsection D, category A waterway does not include the following. You'll see that we've added D and E. D refers to ephemeral stream. An ephemeral stream is essentially one that flows only during periods of high precipitation. This would address a significant concern brought forth that any building in Oregon could be a Category A waterway because, as we know, during a heavy rainfall, those gullies fill up with water and might become floatable for a very short period of time. To address that, we've defined a ephemeral stream. We've also put in that E, which directs that those portions of a stream within 2,500 feet of the headwaters would not be a Category A waterway. This, I believe, recognizes that there is very sensitive habitat and water quality concerns at the headwaters and provides some concern that that the DSL brought forth was to not have this be affected with the ebb and flow of tide and those headwaters that are not currently under public ownership. So that was defined into the amendment.
I
appreciate hearing that, Senator Corcoran.
Well, I was like, it was a secret. Thanks a lot, Phil. I wasn't going to tell people how I like being lobbied, you know.
You guys got to get smarter. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Accepting the indulgence of the committee, I'll, you'll find the definition on page 2 of the hand and growth. Added at lines 5A through D is the definition for a ephemeral stream. Again, you'll also find here that on line 19, portage is deleted. And this eliminates a concern that was raised by Senator Wild that there was a concern about a takings issues being sought under Portage. Through some consultation with the Department of Justice, we realized that that is, in fact, a very significant concern. And so, as to avoid landing in court, we've chosen to delete this language. Continuing forward to page 3, you'll find another amendment. This is some cleanup language. It had read that the areas designated by Division of State Lands or other appropriate state agencies that the public might be able to swim, picnic, hunt, camp, vehicular access, or unconfined fires, and that they could designate those areas on private lands. That was certainly not the intent. And so to address that, it was deleted on lines 1 and 2, and on lines 19A through C, reworded to state the Division of State Lands may designate public areas where those activities may take place. You also see on page 3 that Portage language was again deleted, and again on page 3A, this being consistent with earlier. On page 4, again, corrective language on lines 24 and 25, it is read, this is referring to exempting lands from property taxes. And under 4A, the taxpayer must be the owner of the bed and banks of the waterway. And it said where the waterway is floatable. Well, if it was floatable, it would have been a category A waterway. So this was confusing language. Deletion was sought by the Division of State Lands. On page 4A, section 14, you'll find, I believe, to be cleanup language by legislative counsel. And could I turn maybe to John Lowe? You understood better why legislative counsel did this.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director of Division of State Lands. The concept that is in the original bill here was that to offer a level of protection to private property owners from liability that's currently in law under ORS 105.672. One of the provisions that Phil referred to further on in the bill is a sunset provision. It puts this whole statute in place for a period of 5 years as a kind of a test. I believe what legislative counsel was doing here was amending the language in 105.672 in such a way so that it would go away at the conclusion of the sunset provision.
Okay. Questions from the committee?
I might continue forward then on section 16, line 12, you see that a shall has been turned into a may. This is an idea to basically conceptually develop this pilot project before funding is sought, because it's not very clear as to what level of FTE and monies would be necessary. On page 5A, section 17 has been added, and this, I believe, refers to having the Division of State Lands report on the effects of Senate Bill 832 to the 2005 Legislative Assembly, which will make sense because if you look to section 19, there is a sunset placed. The reason why this was done is to give both senators and the general public and landowners some certainty that this act will be reviewed, and that we'll be able to do so with hard data instead of operating on a lot of emotions, which I think is fair to characterize on this subject. Finally, on Section 18, there were some concerns raised about Senate Bill 832 affecting federally treated tribes. That was, again, never the intent, and this is clarification language to state that this would not affect those tribes. We've spoken with Warm Springs and the Umatilla, and they are pleased with this addition.
Phil, I've got one little concern that Ray Kelly raised a moment ago, and that's on Section 16, where State Parks and Recreation may establish an Oregon pilot program, and then maybe a fiscal. And I'm wondering if And I'm not going to propose this change now, but if we indicated in the bill, State Parks and Recreation Department may, within existing budget, establish an organ. That's language that could be, possibly if we do get the sorted outside, it could be added over there. And I'm not trying to add additional workload to those folks, but I want to get things before and see where it goes.
Very good.
And just keep that in the back of your mind, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll do so, and we'll also touch base with State Parks.
I recognize
they're actually in attendance, so.
Recognizing this is not a perfect bill by any stretch, and I just like to get it out there and get a debate out on the floor. If it goes someplace, that's fine. Take a look at it down the road and see what happens. Anything further for these questions?
Just a couple of questions, maybe to allow Phil to respond to something we've gotten a file from Senator Bryant's desk, a group of landowners and Tolius River landowners. I just wanted to see if maybe the Dash 8s addressed some of their concerns. So maybe I'll just go through a couple of these issues that they raised and see where you're, you know, what you think the Dash 8s do in terms of their comfort level.
Sure.
832 threatens decades of conservation efforts by private landowners along the Tolius. You address that issue?
I think with the referral there is to the Headwaters, and that was why the language is added with regard to recognizing the sensitive habitat down there. And my understanding is that the authors of that letter agree that this does address that concern.
Okay, another one is Senate Bill 832 will lead to more litigation, more expense to the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, it's our belief that Senate Bill 832 is grounded in law, recent law, that being the Checo River case of 1994, where we last had this issue raised in the state of Oregon. That was also based on McKenzie River case findings as well. And
Okay. One other one here that I thought was pretty hard nosed. Riparian landowners face the real prospect of voters camping overnight in their front yards.
With the A and growth version, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, restrictions were placed on that activity of camping as well as hunting. This is an idea that is not new. It comes from a Montana law that we can use as a referral, which has been taken to court, still stands, and is working well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having been the sole no vote previously, I have to thank the steelheaders for taking into account all of the concerns I presented to them. They made all of the changes I requested, and I really like things working that way because I think my concerns were very genuine and real, and they were addressed, and so I will be a yes today. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We have a question on 832, and I would like you folks to sit down. Is there any more?
All right, more questions? Move the Dash 8 amendment.
Senator Corcoran moves the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 832. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Move 832 as amended. The floor will be passed.
Senator Corcoran moves Senate Bill 832 as amended. The floor will be passed. Recommendation. Any discussion? Objection? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Chair, aye. Senate Bill 832 is amended. Pass the floor. Do pass recommendation. The chair will carry. And close the work session on 832. Ready? Well done.
Well done,
and we're adjourned.